All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, it is time to head back into the Marvel Cinematic Universe for another Marvel film. We are talking about Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. It's officially Phase 4 time. You guys know I'm not really the biggest Marvel person, but I enjoy the movies, and I really enjoyed this one, so I'm excited to talk about it. Joining me is Brian Scuttle from Sonic Cinema, and it's his first time on the show. We had a great time talking about this movie and what Marvel is doing moving forward since that big, gigantic, insane 23-film series that they previously did. We had the little palate cleanser, so to speak, of Black Widow, but now it's time to start moving the story forward, and move it forward they do with this movie. So we're going to get to that conversation here in a second, but I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser or Good Pods, and we'd really appreciate your ratings and reviews. We've had a few really nice reviews lately over there on the Apple Podcasts and the Podchaser, and I don't think anyone's reviewed us on Good Pods yet, but you should. But, you know, we really enjoy it when you give us feedback about what's going on here on the show, what you like about it, what you don't like about it. Specifically, what you like about it is some of the best feedback. We really like that. But I want to hear everything you've got to say about what we're doing here on Piecing It Together. So definitely leave those reviews. And, of course, share the show with your friends. Check out our Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon. Lots of great content over there. And don't forget to follow us on social media at PiecingPod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. So it's time to get into this conversation about Shang-Chi, but before we get into it, I do want to say we had some technical difficulties on this episode. You know, we just passed 200 episodes. Hasn't happened in a long time, but you know what? It's a podcast. Sometimes these things happen. Luckily, I had a backup recording as well as a backup of the backup, and I had to, excuse the pun, but I had to piece this thing together from various recording sources, so you're going to hear a couple of little switch-ups in audio quality, and then for the bulk of the conversation, the recording is based off of a Zoom recording, which those of you who know me know I don't really like Zoom, but that's another story for another time. Anyway, there's varying different versions of the recording I had to piece together to get this episode out to you, so just know, if you're making a podcast, it happens sometimes, but the conversation's still there, so let's get to that conversation now. All right, so we're going to talk about Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, and joining me to talk about it is Brian Scuttle. Brian, how is it going?
It's going pretty well. Thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. This should be a fun conversation. This movie this movie is all over the place. There's so much going on in it, but it's a lot of fun. But we'll get into that in a second. Before we do, it's your first time on the show. Why don't you tell my listeners a little about you and your podcast and everything you're up to?
So I'm a film critic. My website is www.sonic-cinema.com. I have been writing, not exclusively on Sonic Cinema for the entire time, but I have been writing about film for the past 25 years. Mm-hmm. Sonic Cinema has been online since 2004. I do have my own podcast, the Sonic Cinema podcast. You can find that on Google, Apple, Spotify, as well as the Sonic Cinema podcast YouTube channel. I mostly do written reviews, but I do also occasional video reviews. I do try to do a Twitch stream as well on twitch.tv/scuttlelemur. So
okay,
I've got a lot going on. And I've got a lot that I try to have going on this past year in particular with COVID. I've been off work for most of the time in terms of being furloughed from my job, but it basically just gave me a chance to really dive into Sonic Cinema and really devote a lot of great time to honing my craft as far as writing about films and talking about films as well.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I always feel like whenever I'm guesting on other people's podcasts, they're always like, wow, you do a lot of stuff. And now I'm on the other side of that. Like, yeah. You do so many things. And also, I mean, we should talk about it for a quick second. You also came into this, you were a composer as well. You compose music just like I do.
Yeah. So I actually went to college to study music industry, in particular sound recording. I'd been mm-hmm. playing trombone for a number of years, and I had actually in my junior and senior year of high school, I'd really gotten obsessed with film soundtracks. And so uh-huh. I really wanted to score movies. And so I studied at Georgia State University in their music industry program. I had gotten to and I started to compose at that point. I did mostly electronic stuff as well as a few classical pieces. I do have a number of albums available on CD Baby, on plenty of other streaming music platforms, as well as that on Bandcamp too.
Yeah.
But Sonic Cinema also has some of my pieces up as well. And I've done a couple of short films that friends of mine did. I tried my hand at making short films on my own in the late 2000s, but ultimately film criticism was where my passion for movies took me, and it's been really rewarding.
Awesome. Well, let's start getting into Shang-Chi here. Before we start like getting into puzzle pieces and all that, are you a big Marvel guy? Were you super looking forward to this one?
I was actually. This was probably one of the most one of the ones I was most excited about in terms of the Phase 4 lineup. I'm not as big of a comic person, but I have been a big fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And you know, it was funny, like having that year or two off of the MCU last year was really it really got me even more excited for what we were gonna see in Phase 4. And
sure.
But Shang-Chi, just because of the fact that it's ultimately a very different type of superhero that we're used to. It's not, even though there are similarities, I think, in the origin films in terms of the different beats and themes that they touch on, I do think this is a very different type of story than what we have seen in Marvel and MCU origin stories. And I think that's one of the things that really kind of excited me, as well as some of the cast in this too. I mean, we have Tony Leung, who's a legend. We have Michelle Yeoh, who's also a legend. Awkwafina, who's been one of the brighter spots in movies and smaller roles, as well as bigger roles like The Farewell. And yeah, sure. I was pretty excited for this. And, I got a chance to see it last week, and it's funny, we're recording this on the day that the reviews dropped. The embargo was lifted, and so you can read my thoughts about it on Sonic Cinema, but overall, I just really enjoyed this.
Yeah, me too. I had a lot of fun with it, and I enjoy these Marvel movies, but, you know, comic books aren't my thing, and comic book movies aren't necessarily my favorite thing, but I, you know, end up seeing all of them inevitably. And this is a fun one. This one goes, one thing that I want out of, if I'm going to go see a superhero movie, I want it to go big, because that's what I want to see. I want to see all that money get spent up on the screen. Yeah. If they're going to give these people all this money, let's spend some of it and make something that's like exciting visually and just a lot of fun and a lot of action. And this movie delivers in that front. So I'm excited to see how the general response is going to be once it comes out. We're obviously recording this ahead of time, luckily, but yeah, let's start getting into some puzzle pieces here for Shang-Chi. We'll get into some of the more finer points about the movie along the way. What do you have for your first puzzle piece?
So my first one's a bit of an unconventional one, but it's one of the first ones that I did notice as I was watching Shang-Chi, and that is How to Train Your Dragon 2. And the reason I came up with that one is because of the fact that it's that movie is a lot about what Hiccup has sort of inherited, the types of traits that he's gotten from both his mother and father. And I think as the film goes on with Shang-Chi, you definitely get more of an impression that he is the product of both of his parents. I mean, not just in a biological sense, in a spiritual sense, as well as a character sense as well. And you definitely see that in the flashbacks with his mother, as well as her sister, played by Michelle Yeoh, in this. And you definitely see the pressures that have been put on him by Tony Leung's character as the movie progresses forward. And really, both of the siblings in this movie. And it's one of those things where I really love that dynamic when it's explored. And I think it's a really important dynamic. And it's one of those things that I think gets people thinking of what ultimately makes up a person and what makes us up as an individual. And I know when I saw How to Train Your Dragon 2, that movie hit me really hard because of the fact that I just lost my father a few months before. And for those months, it really got me wondering and thinking about like what traits they picked up from him versus what traits I'd picked up from my mother. And right. I think it's really fascinating to see how different films can explore that. And it's something that we really haven't seen before in the Marvel universe.
Sure. Yeah, and that is, it's such a universal thing that's why you can see that within, you know, an animated kids movie to a big superhero thing to, you know, some kind of drama that maybe would explore those kinds of ideas. And it's just a thing that I think everybody kind of deals with figuring out, you know, who they are and what their parents have kind of brought to the table for them as a person. And so, yeah, I mean, that's a major thing. And I actually surprisingly haven't seen the second How to Train Your Dragon. I saw the other ones, but one of these days I got to complete that and get to that one.
Yeah, the second one is my personal favorite of the three, is that personal connection with, you know, seeing it after my dad died. But ultimately, I love that entire trilogy.
Awesome. Well, speaking of trilogies and speaking of issues with parents and things like that, I'm going to go to Star Wars for my first puzzle piece, which is obviously a very, very obvious one here. But I mean, we've got the whole father-son dynamic. Yeah. We've got, instead of different colored lightsabers, we have different colored rings and very beautifully shot action sequences between father and son with those.
Yeah.
And then also really, I mean, Star Wars comes up so much when talking about Marvel movies. Marvel movies come up so much when talking about the recent Star Wars movies. It's just this never-ending cycle of these two series, both of course owned by Disney, just continuing to inspire one another and push each other to just go bigger and more over the top. And you know, like I said at the beginning of the conversation, I like when these things go bigger and over the top and hopefully don't hold back. And so that's a fun direction for these kind of movies to take.
No, it's funny because of the fact that for some reason I'm a huge Star Wars fan. The Star Wars trilogy has been the original trilogy has been my life for my entire life. And, you know, it's funny, I didn't actually think about that one, but yeah, when you think about that original trilogy and especially in the last two with the dynamics between Luke and Vader, yeah, you can absolutely see the influence that those movies had on this one. And the idea of the son trying to redeem the father and, you know, the father sort of, well, we're not going to get into that, but I don't want to spoil away. Too much.
You can spoil away. It's fine.
So I just the idea that the father sort of sacrifices himself for his son in the end. And it's just one of those, things where, I mean, it is a very universal story. I mean, it's as cribbed of a story in blockbuster films for as long as Star Wars has been has been in the lives of moviegoers. And it is an excellent puzzle piece that, you know, it's funny. Like I said, I, for some reason, I just never put that together, but yeah, it's a perfect example of that.
Yeah. And it was fun when they started getting their own colored rings to fight each other. I mean, that's, you know, it's perfect. Absolutely perfect. But all right, let's move on. What do you have for your next piece?
So my second puzzle piece is another one that really came into focus. It's pretty obvious if you've seen some of the trailers, you've seen some of the different set pieces. It's Ang Lee's Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Sure.
And it's you look at that scene where Tony Leung's character and his future wife are fighting, and that is completely Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. The beauty of the choreography, the scope of that fight scene, the fact that it's both intimate as well as has an epic feel to it. And especially when you go back to the village later and you see Michelle Yeoh training the siblings, and you get those same level of choreography. The wire work in this movie is just absolutely wonderful. And it's shot by, this film is shot by Bill Pope, who did the Matrix movies, who did Spider-Man 2, and he also did Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And you can see this dynamic visual artist, that same visual artist in pretty much every scene of this movie. This is truly, one of the most beautiful films that Marvel has actually done so far, for the most part. I think there are issues later. I think the big climax gets too much into dark and CGI and stuff like that. But for the most part, it's just absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, I would even say some of that ending still looks really cool, at least, even if it does get a little bogged down by a lot of insane CGI in that final sequence, for sure. But yeah, that was on my list as well, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Definitely makes sense as a puzzle piece here. I might as well get this one out of the way because it's another super obvious one. And I already brought up Star Wars, so I might as well get right into the Marvelness of a new Marvel movie. And the Marvel movie that it reminds me the most of would have to be Black Panther.
Yes.
Obviously not specifically an origin story because Black Panther had already existed, you know, in the Captain America movie, but, you know, focusing on a character that's a person of color and in that person's specific cultures and traditions, and that particular culture having a hidden village like somewhere within our world, everything there is hidden from the outside world, but is like everyone there is at peace and more advanced, and just, you know, they're completely ready to take on anything, and they're protecting some hidden thing that is important for them and them only to be the protectors of. It's all the same kind of thing as what Wakanda was for Black Panther. And so it's definitely a similar setup here in Shang-Chi.
Yeah, and Black Panther is probably the Marvel movie that I would compare the most to this. And part of the reason I would say that is, in addition to everything that you said, I think, let's face it, the Marvel movies, especially the men in the Marvel movies, have a lot of daddy issues, and they find themselves and they often find themselves cleaning up after their father's messes. And Black Panther, I think one of the reasons that this and Black Panther stand out is because of the fact that the issues that Shang-Chi and T'Challa are facing in those their respective movies are very different than what we see Thor having to deal with in terms of Odin, and Tony Stark with his father. And they're more, to a certain extent, they're more spiritual journeys as much as they are adventure journeys. And I think that is, I mean, you could say that about Iron Man as well and Tony Stark, but at the same time, I think the father figures, and we'll go ahead and get into this because Tony Leung is probably one of the most interesting antagonists in the Marvel universe. I think
that's fair. Yeah.
I think he's up there with Thanos because of the fact that he's, unlike Thanos, he's not a strict villain in the true sense. he's that's why I use the word antagonist as opposed to villain, because I don't necessarily consider him a villain. I think he is somebody who is, I think he's somebody who gave himself over to grief when his wife died. I think that gave him sort of an excuse to go after what he really wanted in life, which was power. And I think he uses his children as a means to do that, in hopes that by bringing them back together, he'll get them to come along with that. In which case, it is, now I'm saying that, it is very much in the vein of Star Wars, because that's kind of what Vader's trying to do with Luke. But Tony Leung is so good in this movie. And
he's great. Yeah.
You know, he just, I mean, he's a legend. I mean, he's a living legend. I mean, all you have to do is just mention In the Mood for Love, and he's a legendary status after that. And then he's worked with John Woo. He's worked with Ang Lee in Lost Caution. And he's just got such a tremendous ability to show us the slow burn in a character. And I think, and to show us the quiet emotions in characters. And I think that's one of the things that distinguishes him and makes him so great. And I think you really do get a chance to see this in Shang-Chi.
Yeah, I absolutely do. And it is funny how much the Star Wars thing just continues to pop up through this, but it's there. But what do you got for your next piece?
So my next one is a little bit, again, sort of like How to Train Your Dragon. It's a bit of a more unconventional one. It's one that really only has, it really only has a connection to one set piece in this movie. And that's Jan de Bont's Speed. And that opening, and that sequence that we've started to see more clips of, where Awkwafina is driving the bus while Shang-Chi is fighting off the assassins. And that is, I mean, even though Keanu Reeves doesn't do any real fighting on the bus in Speed, you can see the blueprint of like Sandra Bullock's character in that movie in Awkwafina's role in that one scene. Yeah. And just her trying to weave, get out of control, you know, try to not like wreck the bus and all of that stuff. It's a very simple one, but it's a really effective one. And it really does work towards one of the things that I love about this movie, which is, for the most part, this is a very clean visual palette in terms of the way it shoots action. And, you know, in my review, I brought up there's a fighting scene that Shang-Chi is, he ends up fighting against his sister in basically a cage match. And I bring up the recent film Snake Eyes, which has a similar scene, different stakes, but the scene in Snake Eyes is so incomprehensible in terms of the way it's shot, in terms of the way it's edited. It's done in a way that we've kind of become conscious of, which is this idea that quick cutting and quick shooting and very close-ups in the movie, in the way this scene is shot, automatically means, oh, this is a hard-hitting, bruising fight. And it's that's supposed to give us the weight, where it's like, there's considerably more weight in the scene in Shang-Chi, and that is much more cleanly cut and shot and put together just in general. And there's a fantastic fight choreography in this movie in general.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And yeah, I think that fight scenes are something that not just Marvel, I think just in general, have been a little bit lacking lately. Yeah. You don't really see very good ones in a lot of movies lately. And that does tend to just be part of the times right now and the way these things are being shot. And so it's great to see such good action on screen. I guess that's a good lead into my next puzzle piece then, which is another really obvious one, but it has to be part of the conversation. And really just as an overall, he's almost a genre into himself, the films of Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much Jackie Chan here in the fight choreography. I'm not sure which movie in particular, maybe Legend of the Drunken Master, maybe a little Rumble in the Bronx in there.
Yeah.
Even Wheels on Meals, which I just watched last year for the first time. You know, just a lot of funny over-the-top stunts and martial arts work that is just incredible choreography and using the environments and using things that you wouldn't expect the character to use within his fighting. Of course, people love to bring up the jacket scene, which
yeah.
there was a whole thing on Twitter about people not realizing that it happened before in the history of fighting.
Right.
But, you know, Jackie Chan's the best. And I think everybody needs to at least watch a few of his movies at some point just to like kind of get what's so awesome about him.
Oh, absolutely. And to start off that, I would go ahead and say it's still on HBO Max Police Story. The first Police Story is on HBO Max.
Sure.
And I mean, yeah. the two Police Story movies are on in the Criterion Collection. So be sure to check those out. Yeah. I mean, Jackie Chan was one of the ones I came up with as well. And it you're right. It's an obvious one. And I mean, I wish I could say I was as familiar with his Hong Kong work as I am with his American work. But yeah, like sure. Rumble in the Bronx is definitely one that came to mind. And one of the stunt coordinators on Shang-Chi is Brad Allen. And he worked with Jackie Chan in a lot of his movies. But he passed away recently. And this is one of his last films. He did do stunt coordination for The Kingsman, which is coming out as well. And he just does the fight choreography in this movie is so clean. It's so precise. And the way that everybody pulls it off is just really effective, really well done.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, cool. So what do you have for your next piece?
So my fourth piece is another one that I think a lot of people will think is kind of obvious, but at the same time, I'm going to go slightly less obvious route with it. And and like Jackie Chan, he's kind of a genre unto himself. He's kind of a body of work unto himself, and that's John Woo, the great Hong Kong filmmaker. I mentioned that Tony Leung had worked with Woo before in Hard Boiled, which is one of the great contemporary action films of all time. But the movies I want to bring up specifically of Woo's that I think more feel of a piece with what we see in Shang-Chi are Red Cliff, which he made in 2009, also starring Tony Leung. And is a massive battle epic that's just absolutely tremendous. There are two different versions of it. There's a 2.5 hour version that American audiences got. There's also a 2-part, roughly 5-hour version that international audiences got. Both are completely well worth it. Although I will say if you watch the international version, you will not want to watch the United States version. It's just It's such a fantastic spectacle and just really it feels of a piece with a lot of Woo's work thematically, but it's working on a scale that we really hadn't seen from him before. And the other one and the other movie that I wanted to bring up is a 1979 movie that Woo made called Last Hurrah for Chivalry. I saw it in the Criterion Collection last year. I'm not sure if it's still available there, but it's more of an old school martial arts sword fighting epic. And that's something, but again, it feels a piece with John Woo's work in terms of the ideas of brotherhood, in terms of friendship, as well as delivering some really strong action sequences. If you get a chance to watch it, I highly recommend it. But those two movies, even more than I love Hard Boiled, I love The Killer, I love Better Tomorrow, but it feels like those two movies, like Red Cliff and Last Hurrah for Chivalry, feel more of a piece with what Destin Daniel Cretton and the other filmmakers on Shang-Chi are doing. And in terms of, not just in terms of setting, but just in terms of set pieces as well. They're much more grand in scope than even something as amazing as the hospital finale in Hard Boiled. And yeah, that's kind of why I went that particular direction with John Woo.
Yeah, and John Woo films, I mean, talk about over the top and and fun. I mean, you know, that it kind of can't get better than that. I actually haven't seen Last Hurrah for Chivalry, so I'm going to have to check that out one of these days. I got to put that on the watch list.
Yeah. I'm not, like I said, I'm not sure if it's still on Criterion Channel. If it is, it's well worth checking out.
Awesome. Well, I'll go for my next piece. I'm going to move from authentic Asian cinema of Jackie Chan and John Woo to about as far as you could get and go with John Carpenter's Big Trouble Little China from 1986. Because it's a totally different kind of movie, but I mean, the mixture of martial arts, comedy, fantasy, action. You've got monsters, you got creatures, you've got ancient Chinese culture, you've got comic book campy stuff. It's just everything just kind of heaped together and thrown into a big hodgepodge. And it's makes for a really cinematic movie. And I mean, that movie was not a success when it came out, but it's become a cult film over the years. But I have a feeling Shang-Chi is going to be a success right out the gate. So it'll definitely be different in that department. But as far as like the kind of over the top fun that could be had by both of these movies, I think they kind of go together pretty well.
Yeah, this is another one like Star Wars where I can't believe I didn't think of it. But I literally just watched Big Trouble in Little China for the first time last month. So I can't believe I didn't think of it while watching Shang-Chi, because you're right. The combination of fantasy, martial arts, comedy, and especially the comedy. I think the comedy in Shang-Chi, I think that's something that if you're just paying attention to the trailers, people were concerned about, especially when it came to Awkwafina's character. But and there are times where it's like, I'm not quite sure how well it works in the context of a film, but as the movie progresses, that comedy becomes something that really helps to ground the movie. And it is absolutely right. And one of the things that I love about that, I mean, you know, you could almost make the argument that Awkwafina has a similar role in this as Kim Cattrall does in Big Trouble in Little China. Now, Grant, I mean, it's obvious Kim Cattrall's character is supposed to be a little bit more of a romantic lead, and it's possible, but we've got Awkwafina and they're just best friends. And she just happens to be thrust into this situation with Shang-Chi. And it's just a really entertaining duo that they make. And it's really one of those things where it's like, by the end, you completely are on board with the fact that she's on board with this scenario, and that it earns that ending with those two characters. It's really such a fun thing. But yeah, Big Trouble in Little China is a wonderful comparison to this, I think.
Awesome. Well, what do you got next?
So I think the last one that I can really think about is this is another sort of action movie, but it's really one specific movie, but really in terms of action, the one thing, all of these movies sort of have the same type of thing, and that's the Daniel Craig Bond movies. And it's especially that scene after the fight in the club where they're trying to get away and you see him on the scaffolding. And that set piece really remind me of some of the scenes we've seen in the Daniel Craig Bond movies over the past few films, like Spectre and Casino Royale, especially Skyfall, and just the athleticism that goes into those, the different ways that the rescues happen, the getting away versus staying and fighting. And again, it goes back to not just the choreography by Brad Allen, but the cinematography by Bill Pope. There's some absolutely, especially with the neon in the background, it's such an easy, obvious thing to do in terms of the way of lighting that scene, but it just works so beautifully because you're just watching the shadows work. And it's one of those things that really, I couldn't help but especially with that scene in particular, that's one that brought came to mind.
Yeah, it's funny you're bringing up recent Bond movies because just recently the Black Widow movie, we were talking about classic Bond movies, you know, mm-hmm. and some of the more like hokey elements of the classic Bond movies. So it's funny where some of the inspirations seem to come from Marvel movies lately. It's pretty interesting. So I will go for my last piece then. And I do have a few other movies that I had thought about including here, but I just thought it would be fun. Maybe I have video games on the mind from our recent Free Guy episode, but I'm going to combine three video games for very specific comparisons as my final piece here. Just three quick little things. I don't know if you're familiar how much of a gamer you are, but a pretty obvious video game series, The Legend of Zelda, the whole Lost Forest thing with the hidden pathway through the forest way, which I thought was like a fun little, a fun little thing that I haven't really seen in movies before. I mean, it's been in other games, but certainly Legend of Zelda is known for it. Also, the Panzer Dragoon series with people commandeering dragons to fly at each other. So I thought of that. And then last but not least, the Dynasty Warrior series, specifically in the opening scenes with Wen Wu, when he and his rings are just absolutely demolishing entire crowds of people like it's nothing. It just totally reminded me of the way that the gameplay takes place in those games where your character just takes out just hundreds of people at a time. And so just a few little references, just kind of throw it in, a little change of pace there, but I thought that'd be a fun puzzle.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I'm not familiar with those other two, but I mean, I'm a classic OG Legend of Zelda player, so yeah, I mean, I can completely see where that comparison is. And yeah, the hidden fortress and the mystical characters and all of that stuff is really a fun element of this that I think to a certain extent you almost will. I think to a certain extent, you won't even necessarily think about it showing up until it actually shows up. And, sure. But yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's like, you know, that's kind of what Legend of Zelda was inspired by too. I mean, they were inspired by Quest movies where it's like, yeah, granted, the Quest was very familiar. Oh, you have to save the girl and stuff like that. In this case, it's not quite that simple, but at the same time, it's based on the same basic idea of one single hero who's having to ultimately save the day. And as a really fun comparison.
Awesome. Well, I will go ahead and do the finished puzzle, and then we'll get into some closing thoughts here on Shang-Chi. We talked about How to Train Your Dragon 2, the Star Wars movies, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Black Panther, Speed, the Jackie Chan films, John Woo films, Big Trouble Little China, the recent Daniel Craig Bond movies, and then a few video games we squeeze in there, Dynasty Warriors, Legend of Zelda, and Panzer Dragoon. Are there any things that we didn't quite get to that you wanted to mention here in the conversation?
I do think one of the things that we really, it's going to be interesting to see the reaction. I agree with you on this movie. I hope it's a positive reaction. I think it will be because of the fact that like Marvel really hasn't done a movie that's combined like action and comedy in quite this way. I mean, even the Guardians of the Galaxy movies don't really play with action comedy in the same way that we're working in here. This is more of a traditionally stripped down action comedy movie. And I think that's going to be one of the things that really connects people to it. And also it's part of what makes it as grounded as it is. I mean, even until you get to the very end where it's basically CG characters against CG characters, it's very grounded in a reality. And I love the world building in this movie. And it's funny to think that this type of, it's sort of like with when Guardians of the Galaxy came out, where it's like, you have this whole part of the Marvel universe that you didn't even know existed. And it's like, we've seen a lot of different sections of this universe. And I love that one of the things we're seeing with this, with Loki and the Eternals in November, we're going to be seeing these different areas of the Marvel universe that we really have only scratched the surface on. And I think I think that's one of the benefits of being done with the Infinity Saga, because of the fact that it's like, now we can sort of play with a little bit of improvisation in terms of what these stories are building towards. And that's very exciting.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I do think that that's like a kind of a weird takeaway that I'm not quite sure what to expect. I guess maybe after Eternals, we'll know a little bit better, like where things go. But like, it's just so crazy how Marvel was able to do the whole 23 film Infinity Saga, and where like it kept feeling like it was building towards something over and over again. And that's never happened before with anything, really. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to imagine it ever happening again, but it's also hard to imagine, at least for me personally, like where this is going as far as like if they are going to try to do it again, or are we just going to get a bunch of random other stories that happen in this universe? It's an interesting thing, and it's kind of hard to tell from here.
I mean, the one thing that we definitely know between Loki, between WandaVision, between what we're going to be getting in a few months with Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is obviously they're setting up the multiverse. And
yeah,
I'm excited to see what that's going to do. I'm also curious to see if they're really going to be able to work towards something as clear-eyed, straightforward as what they were able to build towards in the Infinity Saga. It's like, I don't necessarily see how that's going to happen, but at the same time, you know, anything is possible. It's like basically,
sure,
you know, you look at what we've gotten so far this year in terms of Marvel, and it's really in, I mean, Black Widow's side, because I mean, that's more of a that's sort of a film out of time with this franchise now, but every other project that we've seen so far is building towards changing the universe fundamentally in a way that we didn't necessarily see coming. And I think that's one of the more exciting things about it.
Absolutely. Only other thing I thought I'd mention real quick, just because we didn't touch on him at all, but Ben Kingsley back as the Mandarin, yes. The fake Mandarin, is so funny.
He really
he's so
is.
Great in this. It talk about the comedy. It was so funny between him and Awkwafina. That very funny movie.
Yeah, it was funny because of the fact that I just saw somebody's tweet online. They were complaining about how one of the things they hate most about the MCU was the way the Mandarin was done in Iron Man 3. And yes, of course, that comes up in this movie. But yeah, like you mentioned, Trevor, Ben Kingsley character, does in fact come back. And, you know, it's interesting. I wasn't quite sure how I would feel about that, but like you said, I mean, I think the comedy with the character really is successful. And, you know, he's just the same character that we saw by the end of Iron Man 3. And it's really a fun way of calling back to that controversy in a way that makes it even more silly, but also makes it make sense in the context of the film.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Love it. So much fun. Well, right on. I think that about does it for Shang-Chi. Brian, is there another movie you watched recently that you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
So I will say, I mean, this is as far removed from, you know, what we're talking about in terms of Shang-Chi, the Marvel Universe and stuff like that. But there's a fascinating documentary that I saw recently that I reviewed on the site. It's called 499, and it's a film that sort of mixes, it's actually funny, it kind of mixes documentary form and ideas with fantasy in exploring the way that violence has been done over the years. As a conquistador from the Spanish conquest walks out of the ocean, and he basically looks at the modern day Mexico, and it's just a fascinating exploration of violence and the past and the present. You hear this conquistador's imagined thoughts of like how he sees what has happened to the world now, and it's actually, I'm not gonna say it'd be a strict double feature choice. I think it's available in theaters. I'm sure it will be available on VOD if it's not already. It's really a fascinating movie, and I would recommend, if you're interested in that type of movie, sort of documentary with a little bit of fantasy, but also touching on some real ideas, I would recommend that one.
Oh, it sounds really interesting. I hadn't heard of it, but yeah, I think I'm going to have to check that out. Sounds great. But awesome. Brian, why don't you tell people again where they can find you and your podcast?
The website is www.sonic-cinema.com. That's basically where you'll find my movie reviews, my movie discussions. I sometimes go deeper into certain filmmakers. I just did one on Alex Proyas, the director of The Crow and Dark City, earlier this month. And you can also find the Sonic Cinema podcast. I just released an episode on three of Alfred Hitchcock's films. I've got another one coming up on two of Terrence Malick's films. And That's the main place you can find me, as well as the Sonic Cinema podcast is also available on Apple, Google, and Spotify. And you can also find my music on places like CD Baby and Bandcamp.
Awesome. Well, that all sounds great. And Brian, thanks again for joining me on this one. And maybe we'll be able to get you back again sometime.
Thank you very much. And yeah, I'd love to have you on the Sonic Cinema podcast at some point.
Definitely. Anytime. You just let me know.
Tired of the same old sports podcast where two bros just bro out about football and hard seltzer? Yeah, me too. That's why I got my two bros together and started LA Confidential, where we talk about the Rams, Chargers, and at gunpoint the Dallas Cowboys. But we don't bro out, and there's not a single can of hard seltzer in sight. Just three best friends having a nice casual conversation like you would over beer. Sure, we go into the NFL, but we also talk about memories we had with each other, embarrassing stories, family revelations, and whatnot. Okay, maybe you don't like football. We also talk about the Dodgers, Lakers, Clippers, Bruins, Trojans, and whatever LA sports news might be going on at the moment. Oh, you don't like sports? That's okay. We apply our same casual but analytical attitude towards Marvel, DC, movie trailers, movie casting, award season, and we even do top five rankings and recommend good stuff to watch every week. We're LA Confidential, the chillest podcast about LA sports, part of the LAFB Football Network. Listen now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's LA Podfidential, part of the LAFB Football Network.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Shang-Chi. Thanks for bearing with us with the little technical difficulties. We're podcasters. It happens sometimes, you know? We do this show for free. It's, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, thank you to Brian for joining me on that. Make sure to check out his podcast, Sonic Cinema. And yeah, thank you so much for listening to the show, everybody. If you're not already, make sure you're subscribed wherever you listen to podcasts. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Good Pods, on Pocket Casts, on TuneIn Radio, Stitcher. Do people still use Stitcher? If they do, you could subscribe there. Also, rate and review us wherever it is you listen, if they do the rate and review thing. And follow us on social media at Piecing Pod, and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. We got lots of podcasts coming your way, so make sure you are subscribed, so that way you'll find out about the new episodes as soon as they come out. So that does it for today's episode. It's always fun doing a Marvel movie. They're always fun. But let's finish this thing with a piece of music like I always do. And this being a superhero movie, I'm going to go with a track called Hero. It's from my album, A Different Kind of Dream. I hope you enjoy the track. The album is, of course, available on Spotify, on Apple Music, all those places. Or you could buy the album on Bandcamp, on CD Baby, all those different places. But yeah, the album's called A Different Kind of Dream. The song is Hero. Hope you enjoy it. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming out real soon.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.